following program is a production of the Barroom Network. It is intended for all audiences.
Doug Buffon.
This defense sucks. This is moronic.
John Buffon.
If your best run plays are coming off end arounds, there's a problem.
Doug was behind the microphone first. He never held back.
Very difficult to score when your offense is on the bench. When your defense is out there giving up 70, 80, 70, 64-yard drives.
Now, it's his nephew, John, and there's no holding this buffoon back either.
An offensive-minded coach that's running an offense that got 9 yards and a half. A beaten-up defense that isn't necessarily performing in key situations. And a quarterback that was expected to take a big step forward looks like an unsalvageable wreck.
I've had it! I have had it! I want somebody to get kicked in the ass!
How many games can you rattle off that involve the team running the ball 7 times and they win? I can't think of any.
I don't mind you getting beat. I got my ass whipped many times. But I tell you, I took somebody down with me.
Because Bears fans wanted to believe in the worst way that Chicago had a stable, competitive franchise. And this is what we got.
It's Buffon 55, the John Buffon Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Buffon 55, a fast-paced approach at breaking down the Chicago Bears. I'm your host, John Buffon, and with me as always is my producer and co-host, Alyssa Barbieri. Alyssa, after Monday's brutal loss, I don't know if we're going to be as positive as we were last week, but I guess we got to give it a try, huh?
It kind of feels like we're back, you know, where we should be. This is what we expect as Bears fans. You know, the positivity was kind of scaring me there for a little bit. And I feel like we are finally grounded here.
Yeah, it was scaring me, and I'm the person who was spewing it. So we're a bit more grounded this week. But before I introduce our guest today, that's going to help us break down the New Orleans Saints. Can you please let our listeners know what it is we do around here?
Absolutely. So Buffon 55 has 3 segments, and we always begin by learning about the Bears' upcoming opponent from someone who follows them closely. And today, we're fortunate to have John Sigler, managing editor over at Saints Wire. Then that's followed by our B55 segment. That's when I ask you 5 questions, and your response must be completed within 55 seconds. The 55 is John's way of paying tribute to the great Doug Buffon, his uncle, his mentor, and a man who played 15 seasons with the Bears and wore number 55. When we then finish things up by going into the basement, Buffon's basement, where Aldo Gandia joins John and me, and the three of us chug down some Bears talk. So, John, take it away.
All right. Thanks, Alyssa. And welcome to John Sigler, the managing editor over at Saints Wire. John, how are you doing? You staying safe down there? We know you're braving some of the elements to talk with us today.
Yeah, I'm doing great, guys. High and dry for now. You might catch some of the rain smashing into the windows. Here in the background, nothing we have not seen before. Thanks again for having me on the program.
Oh, absolutely, and thank you for helping us break down the Bears' next opponent in the New Orleans Saints. I want to start basically with an overall assessment of this team. After a rough start to the season that featured a pair of losses to the Raiders and Packers, the Saints are riding a 3-game winning streak coming into Chicago. So what's your evaluation of this team as it is through 6 games? Are they on track, overachieving, underachieving? What are you seeing out there?
You know, it feels strange to say this about a team that's 4-2, but they're underachieving very badly. I mean, several of these games have been basically coin flips, coming down to last-second field goal misses by the opposing squad, very narrow point differentials. The Saints have not played up to their talent level, and that's a big reason why they're the number two team in the NFC South right now. A lot of the blame goes to the defense, the defensive secondary especially.
And I wanted to talk about the face of this franchise as it's been for seemingly forever, Drew Brees, because there's been a lot of talk about some decline in his play, but as of late, he's found some rhythm in this offense, which is all the more impressive given the fact he's been without two of his top wideouts. So which Drew Brees should Chicago fans expect to see going into this game?
Brees has really been on the hot streak the last few weeks. He's really risen to the occasion of playing without Michael Thomas, his best receiver, arguably the best player on the team. And he has just done a terrific job just keeping the offense in rhythm, finding the open receiver, really maximizing the talent around him. And he seems to be improving week to week. And this past week's performance against the Carolina Panthers was easily the best game of the year for Brees so far. So it's just all the more impressive that he's doing it without Thomas and Sanders, as it said.
Speaking of Michael Thomas, like you said, one of the best receivers in the game, his status for Sunday's game still up in the air. And as always, towards the trade deadline, big names get thrown out there. There's stories about someone being disgruntled. Now, obviously, the Saints have a lot invested in Michael Thomas. So are a lot of these trade rumors just, you know, for the sake of starting a fire, or is there any smoke to this?
There's a little bit of smoke to it from Thomas's camp. His agents have been working overtime to keep him happy. He's been very frustrated with his injury process all season. So he had a high ankle sprain in week one. He was officially deemed week to week with that issue, and he still hasn't gotten back on the field. It lingered for almost a month. Frustrations boiled over. He got into a scrap in practice. He was benched for a game. He comes back, and possibly because of that issue with his ankle, he wasn't able to work out as well as he's used to, and so his body responded differently. He sprained his hamstring a week ago, so it's just been one bit of bad news after another for him. So his reps have been doing everything they can to keep him happy, whether that's telling Mike Florio that they would like for the Saints to trade him or whatever it may be. I don't believe there's anything of substance to that. Just from my take on the situation, the Saints gave him a $20 million signing bonus 12 months ago. They're not about to renege on that and move him by next Tuesday.
Yeah, that would be really just throwing some money into a fire and just cutting bait, which I don't think they want to do that. So if Thomas can't go, who will be stepping up in the receiving game, and who's a name that Bears fans should keep in mind whenever Brees goes back to pass?
Yeah, so the most experienced receiver left in the group would be Tre'Quan Smith. He's a third year pro. He's been coming on really strong this year. He stepped up in several occasions. Week four's game with the Detroit Lions, he caught all four passes sent his way, scored a pair of touchdowns, brought in 50-something receiving yards. And he's just been a very consistent complementary weapon for the Saints week to week. Now, you would think that with Thomas out, with Emmanuel Sanders still on the COVID-19 reserve list, that the Saints would send more targets to their receivers lower on the depth chart. That may not be the case with the way Alvin Kamara has been playing. I mean, the guy is breaking his own standards. He's averaging 137 yards from scrimmage per game. He's just gone on a tear, and I expect the Saints to lean heavily on him against Chicago.
You mentioned Alvin Kamara, one of the game's most versatile weapons, and the Bears were fortunate enough to avoid him last season. But the pairing of Kamara and Latavius Murray combined for almost 200 total scrimmage yards last week against the Panthers. Why has there been so much success with this New Orleans run game?
You know, it really goes back to what they've invested in their offensive line. They've put in a top 50 draft pick in the offensive line in, I believe, four of their last five draft classes. So you got right tackle Ryan Ramczyk, first round pick out of Wisconsin. You've got right guard Cesar Ruiz, first round pick out of Michigan. The center is a second round pick out of Texas A&M. It's just a really talented front. They've got depending on whether Dante Scarnecchia is still in the game or not, he seems to retire and unretire for the Patriots every year. The Saints may have the best offensive line coach in the NFL right now. And it really shows in games that they do a terrific job of identifying which schemes work best for the runners. For Kamara, it's a lot about size zone. For Murray, it's a ton of inside zone, power plays. We saw a clinic of it in the Bears game last year when Murray got the starting nod and racked up over 100 yards of rushing by himself. So the Saints, they just do a very, very effective job of self-scouting, knowing their own strengths and weaknesses, and doing what they can to maximize that talent.
I am about to explode with envy hearing you talk about that offensive line and the success of it and how it worked. I just can't even imagine having something like that in Chicago, and that pisses me off. So I'm gonna go ahead and just change the defense, where you might be able to talk a little poorly about the Saints. So after after bringing an intense pass rush over on Justin Herbert of the Chargers in Week 6, they failed to get to Teddy Bridgewater last week. We know that Nick Foles is a stationary target. We know the Bears' offensive line is struggling. What can you tell us about the Saints' pass rush?
Yeah, they're very wary of Nick Foles. You know, they faced him several times when he played for the Eagles. He's got a very quick release there in the pocket. He is a stationary pocket passer, but much like Teddy Bridgewater and some of these other quarterbacks that the Saints have seen this year. Matthew Stafford is another one that stands out. The issue with the Saints pass rush is they only have one really blue chip athlete, is the term that comes to mind. And that's someone who just moves differently from the rest of the unit. And that is 30-year pro Marcus Davenport. He's only played 2 games so far, each of the Saints' last 2 games, after suffering an elbow injury in training camp. And he tweaked a toe. It took him a little bit longer than expected to return. Now that he's back in action, it's very clear to see the difference that he makes. He's just such a talented athlete, so fast for his size. He did a cartwheel during the game this past week, actually. He was pancake blocked by the Panthers' left tackle, fell to the ground, and basically did an overhead press of himself off of the turf to get back to his feet and stay in the play, pressure Bridgewater out of the pocket. It was just one of the more mundane, more athletic things I've ever seen. But outside of Davenport, you know, the Saints have really struggled to get the pass rush going. I mean, you look at the team leader in sacks, Trey Hendrickson. Yeah, he's having a career year with his sacks, but he's not really matching the pace on a per-snap basis. You know, he's winning his one-on-one matchup, but he's not chipping in as often as you would like to see. The real disappointment of the group is the other starting defensive end, Cameron Jordan. You know, he's an all-pro and annual Pro Bowler player. He's got 1.5 sacks through 6 games, and that, frankly, that's just not good enough. A large part of that is due to teams identifying him as the main threat and double teaming him very often, something like 35-40% of his reps, and he just is not winning those at a rate that is expected of him. So I do think his production will take a step in the right direction with Davenport back in the lineup, but you know, this is very much a matchup where if Foles can just make his hot reads, make good decisions quickly after the snap, the Saints do not have the athletes to get after him in 2 or 3 seconds. So he could make – if he's efficient in his decision-making, then he could have the Saints catching them flat-footed for much of the afternoon.
You mentioned at the top of this interview some of the struggles in the Saints' secondary. That's something I'm pretty interested in because, as we know, sometimes the Bears will abandon the run game and just start slinging around. What are some of the soft spots in this secondary for the Saints?
Man, so it's number 43, Marcus Williams. He's been the starting free safety, predominantly playing in single high looks for the Saints for 57 games and counting now. And you just wouldn't think it to see him play these days. I mean, he looks like a rookie. He's making bad decisions in coverage. He's not making an impact in zone coverage at all. He's letting tons of receivers run free. He's had a very rough season in a contract season for him. This is the final year of his rookie deal, and he just has not risen to the occasion. He's been a liability in coverage throughout the year, which is very disappointing to see and to say about him because, you know, he made a lot of highlight reels for the wrong reasons with Minneapolis Miracle back in the 2017 playoffs, for missing that tackle at the end of the game. And to his credit, he rebounded very well from that over the next 2 years. So now we're in year four, and he's developed a lot of bad habits. He's, again, struggling to make tackles in the open field. And, again, the coverage issues have been just, man, just constant. And so if the Saints cannot identify what is giving him so much trouble and do something to correct it, whether it's taking him out of the game or playing him in a different alignment, then that is a very vulnerable area of field that the Bears can exploit. So if they can dial up some passes down the seam, down out past six, then that's how I would attack the Saints defense, is look for 43.
That would require at least 2 seconds of pass protection, and I'm not sure they can do that, but time will tell on Sunday. We briefly talked about the trade deadline and Michael Thomas, but could the Saints potentially be buyers with some of the weaknesses you're talking about? Is it in their DNA to maybe make a move and bring someone in to bolster this, or do you see this being a pretty quiet trade deadline?
I could see the Saints making a move. They acquired Eli Apple at the trade deadline the year before last and immediately put him into the starting lineup as the starting cornerback. And they were in the Emmanuel Sanders sweepstakes last year. They weren't able to make a deal. They just didn't have the draft picks to match what other teams were offering. But, you know, they made up for it by signing him in free agency. So they've been active at the deadline. And if they're doing a ton of self-scouting this week. Sean Payton talked about this in a recent press conference about how they're always looking for ways to improve, which is kind of a coach speak thing to say. But, I mean, this is potentially the final year of Drew Brees' career. I mean, he has a job with NBC Sports lined up as a broadcaster for Notre Dame football games as soon as he hangs up his cleats. So, I mean, this is it. So the Saints have got to go all in. They've got to make a move. I don't know if that constitutes a blockbuster move or maybe acquiring some depth. But personally, my personal analysis here, I do think they need to make a move. I'm curious as to how badly they feel they need to add another piece to that roster.
Yeah, if the Drew Brees era is coming to an end, I mean, it would make sense to go all in on that farewell year without a strong backup plan. Is the heir apparent on this roster right now, whether it be Taysom Hill or Jameis Winston, do they have their guy for next year, or do you see them maybe going the draft route or free agency?
Well, they have their guy. It's definitely set up to be a competition between Taysom Hill and Jameis Winston. Right now, Taysom is the only quarterback signed for the future. Winston is on schedule to be a free agent here in the spring. And Taysom does have a starting QB salary. He's set to earn, I believe, $16 million next year, which is mid-level Ryan Tannehill money. So he could.
Yeah.
Right now, my feel of the situation is Taysom is going to get first crack at it, but Jameis Winston is very much here to make him earn that job. So we may have to wait until training camp to see how it shakes out. But the Saints have a lot of faith in both guys. And I think it could be a much worse quarterback situation to be in for life after Drew Brees.
You're preaching to the choir, my friend. But
I wasn't going to go there.
No, we can always go there. We're pretty self-deprecating here, so it's all right. But because we really can't help ourselves, we always ask about special teams, just because special teams and the Bears are synonymous. So is there someone that you would like to spotlight on the Saints special team unit, whether it be a kicker, a punter, a long snapper, a gunner, anyone that Bears fans should keep their eye on when it comes to special teams?
Yeah, watch out for number 11, Deontay Harris. He had a great game. He had a great game returning punts against the Bears last year. As I recall, he had a 48-yard punt return wiped out by a bogus holding penalty as well. So he's dangerous. He's the reigning all-pro return specialist, rookie pro bowler, just so dynamic in that role. And I really hope that he'll get some opportunities to show what he can do. Hopefully the Saints can force some punts for once this week so he can get those looks.
Oh, I'm sure they will. These two teams played last season without Drew Brees, without Alvin Kamara, and it was still pretty brutal at Soldier Field. What is your prediction this time around?
I think it might be closer just because, you know, I may crack a lot of the jokes about the Bears' offense, about the QB situation. I've got a ton of respect for the Bears' defense. The personnel on that side of the ball is just, it's just phenomenal. I mean, the guys up front with Khalil Mack and Akeem Hicks, Kyle Fuller at cornerback, Eddie Jackson, which is the safety the Saints should have drafted when they picked Marcus Williams instead. But I'm not mad about that. the Bears are just so deep, so talented at all three levels of the field on defense. I think this one's going to be close, but I do like the Saints' firepower much more than what the Bears will be cooking with on offense themselves. So my personal prediction right now would go something like Saints 25, maybe 26. I'll be surprised if the Bears get up to 20 points in this game.
That makes two of us. But before I get you out of here, I'm gonna throw you over to Alyssa. Alyssa, you got any questions for John?
I do. I have a couple, but I will say that makes three of us. I don't see how this all. I mean, the offense got outscored by the defense last week. That's just kind of pathetic.
Yeah.
So, John, is there a matchup that you are most intrigued by heading into this game?
Yeah, I really want to see how the Saints approach guarding Anthony Miller. I don't know for certain how involved he's been in the passing game for Chicago, but I've been a huge fan of him ever since he was at Memphis. He's been a dynamic receiver whenever I have gotten the chance to watch him. And he's someone who could hurt the Saints in a lot of the same ways that other receivers have in recent weeks. I look back at Robbie Anderson having a big game a week ago against the Saints, predominantly lining up in the slot. He was very productive against their nickel defender, that's C.J. Gardner-Johnson. He had a good game. And then the Saints game before that was against the Chargers, and that was the Mike Williams game. And to me, Anthony Miller runs a lot of the same vertical routes that those two guys do. He's very effective at the point of the catch. He's dangerous, and the Saints really have not had an answer for that kind of receiver in their recent matchups. And I'm very anxious to see how, or even if they've adjusted to that here on Sunday.
This feels like an Anthony Miller game because Allen Robinson is in concussion protocol right now. So we're going to be seeing a lot of Anthony Miller. So we'll see how the Saints match up against him. So obviously there's not much to be afraid of on offense when facing this Bears team. But on defense, like you mentioned, they're phenomenal. So is there any concerns that you have about the Saints offense going up the Saints defense, whether it's the pass rush or maybe, in the defensive backfield? Anything? What is your biggest concern for the Saints in this game?
Yeah, so I spent a lot of time gushing about the Saints' offensive line to start this segment. To undercut that a little, the left tackle situation is very concerning, and that's because the Saints have an all-pro left tackle in Teron Armstead, but he has a very lengthy injury history in the NFL, and that's continued this week. He exited the Panthers game after 13 snaps, I believe, with an elbow injury. That's in addition to a hand issue he's been dealing with where he's had to tape up one of his hands just to get on the field. And so if he can't go, which was the case last week, that means the Saints have to put their backup left tackle in. That's James Hurst. On one of his very first plays of the game, there after Armstead stepped out, Hurst went in, second-year pass rusher for the Panthers, Brian Burns, just flambéed him, roasted him, whatever adjective you want to use there. It was awful for a sack fumble, saved a touchdown for the Panthers defense, and gave Teddy Bridgewater the ball. I can see that happening over and over and over again with Khalil Mack, and that has really got me worried. So if the Saints cannot get a healthy Teron Armstead in the game, the left side of their offensive line becomes suddenly very, very vulnerable.
So obviously you have a hurricane coming your way there in New Orleans. So how has the weather impacted? How did it impact practice today for the Saints?
Yeah, they dismissed early today. They got their practice session in, but they cut the film study short. I believe they're they tried to do that remotely for a bit, but I know we've had some pretty widespread power outages in the city. But, you know, this is a very quick-moving storm for as far as hurricanes are concerned. We're expecting this to leave the area around midnight, so it should be back to business as usual on Thursday.
Fair enough. And, John, before we cut you loose, can you tell us what you're working on, where people can find your work and interact with you on social media?
Yeah, you can find everything that I put out at saintswire.com, and you can follow me on Twitter at @JOHN_SIGLERR. It's the projects I've got coming down the pipeline, all kinds of trade deadline speculation, trying to find ways for the Saints to improve, trying to make myself look smart in case that they do pull off one of these bold moves. Previewing this Bears matchup. Just trying to stay on top of it. It's a very crowded playoff picture in the NFC, and this game could have very big implications later on down the line. So trying to stay on top of that, see how the match shakes out, and just kind of approach this from every angle I can.
Awesome stuff, John. Well, I want to thank you so much. We really appreciate you basically coming on this podcast in the middle of a hurricane. So thanks so much for being on. Thanks so much for braving the elements, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Outstanding. Thanks again for having me on the show, guys. You all take care.
You too. We got a lot more show coming up. We'll be right back.
Recently on Stuff Your Mom Threw Out.
You know, LeBron in the last 2 years has really taken a step up. I mean, there's that whole section of basketball fans who want to debate whether he's better than Jordan or not. You know, so he's on that level as far as collectibles go. It's usually with a younger audience. You know, Jordan skews older, LeBron skews younger. But Anthony Davis is the guy who snuck up behind it. His rookie cards have taken a precipitous jump.
Really?
Up, yeah. So that's going to help.
Precipitous. Can you spell that?
You know, I probably could, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, I don't think you can. I'm pretty sure you can't.
Yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, okay.
Stuff Your Mom Threw Out with David Schuster and Scott Beatty, only on the Bears Barroom Radio Network.
Welcome back to Buffone 55. Now it's time for our B55 segment. That's when I ask John 5 questions, and his response must be completed within 55 seconds. The 55 is John's tribute to the great Doug Buffone, his uncle, who played 15 seasons with the Bears and wore number 55. So, John, I know this is going to be a little different than in past weeks, but are you ready to go?
Yeah, this one's going to have a different feel to it, but let's go.
Grab a drink, everybody. So the Bears blew a big opportunity to legitimize themselves on Monday night. From top to bottom, the game was just an utter disappointment. If you can, tell us what disappointed you most from the Bears' performance. Good luck. The clock starts now.
What disappointed me the most? What didn't disappoint me? This team, with whatever game plan was constructed, was doomed from the start. The offense was putrid. The line was worse than terrible. They couldn't run. The quarterback was inaccurate. The play calling was garbage. Demetrius Harris had another terrible drop to ruin a drive. We got offensive linemen getting flagged for a false start on fourth down. We got a punt returner who's apparently allergic to leather because he refused to even touch the ball Monday night, which put an already crappy offense in a crappy field position. And you know what really grinds my gears about this whole thing? Listening to everyone talk about the Bears being frauds coming into the game and then watching them get their asses kicked on national TV so everyone can throw an I told you so and on Twitter and text and all over social media. So what disappointed me the most? The fact that the Chicago Bears looked like they were just going to walk in with a 5-1 record and that would be enough to beat the LA Rams. It was an embarrassing performance, and it starts with the guy holding the Denny's menu on the sideline.
I remember thinking, like first quarter in, I'm like, well, those 6 weeks were fun. Now we're back to where we were last season. I mean, like you said, there was so much disappointment. I'm going to just, like, you know, use a broad scope and say the offense obviously was the biggest disappointment. So many different factors, like you pointed out. And like you said, the thing that really gets on my nerves too, is that so many people were ready for the Bears to crap the bed here and ready to be like, oh, they told you so. Look, they're frauds. They're not gonna make the playoffs. See, this would, you know, this couldn't be sustained. And you know, they kind of proved them right. So unless this offense can, you know, somehow pull something out of their butt, I don't know how this is going to wind up.
They played right into it. They played right into the narrative that they were going to get exposed, and they did.
Absolutely. So obviously one of the biggest parts of the offensive struggles was Matt Nagy. And on Tuesday, Nagy hinted that he could reevaluate his duties as play caller, although it doesn't sound like that will be the case against the Saints. What does this tell you about Nagy and his future with the Bears? 55 seconds and go.
Listen, I know Matt Nagy thinks highly of himself and his system, but something has to change. You don't bring in an offensive-minded coach who's going to handle the play-calling duties and then get outscored by your damn defense. Every time the Bears are good, it's because the defense makes plays and the offense does just enough to squeak by. Well, what's Matt Nagy waiting for? When the ESPN commentators publicly call out your play-calling inside the red zone as way too easy for the defense to anticipate, and then Brian Greasy drops a bomb about your quarterback thinking your play calls are doomed from the second he hears them, you gotta swallow your pride and be a leader. When the Bears needed to hurry up and snap the ball to avoid a challenge, it looked like you couldn't decide between the Grand Slam breakfast or the Eggs Benedict with the way your head was buried in the play sheet. You toss it to Cordell Patterson on a fourth down, you roll out an immobile quarterback inside the 5-yard line, and you seemed hell-bent on running the ball at the one guy on the field you shouldn't be running at in Aaron Donald. So, could it possibly get any worse with someone else taking a crack at play calling?
Oh, God, don't tempt the universe. But I mean, I don't think so at this point. I mean, something needs to give. A change needs to be made. I mean, I still don't think that he's going to give up play calling duties. But I mean, definitely, especially looking at what happens against the Saints this week and the Titans and the Vikings, you know, maybe in the bye week is where, you know, give it a serious consideration, because he's just so damn stubborn. And the most frustrating thing is that he's just doing nothing to fix the offense. It's nothing. No. It's the same story over and over again, a broken record. And he's been able to ride that 5-1 record and pretend as if his offense isn't one of the worst in the league. Because, hey, guess what? We still have 5 wins. We're still 5-1. We can be the number one seed in the NFC. After these next 2 weeks?
Yeah, they may not be. They're hiding behind the record. Yeah. And the fact of the matter is that the most likely scenario is nothing changes. They're going to do what they did against the Rams and see if it works against the Saints. It's just always just keep on plugging, keep doing what we're doing, keep rolling. There's no evidence that that works, but that's what we're going to see again.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I'm imagining what it's going to look like against the Saints and with Allen Robinson, you know, probably not suiting up. Oh, my gosh, it's going to be a bloodbath. Oh, yeah. So after this Bears loss, many Bears fans were clamoring for another quarterback change. And no, I'm not talking about Tyler Bray. Would a switch back to the mobile Mitchell Trubisky be a good move, given the massive struggles of this offensive line? Your 55 seconds start now.
Look, I honestly don't see any scenario in which Matt Nagy goes back to Mitchell Trubisky outside of an injury, of course. If you go back to Trubisky now, you're basically showing your hand that you have no idea what you're doing and you're desperate at this point. And that reflects really poorly on not only the head coach, but also the general manager. Foles was the guy that Nagy wanted, and they got him. He made the decision to bring Foles in sooner than we expected, and in true Nagy form, he's going to try to prove to everyone that he made the right decision. But aside from that, I don't think you can be a 5-2 football team that is constantly going to talk about which quarterback should start this week. We were having this discussion when Mitch was struggling, and now we're having it when Foles is struggling and the line is collapsing. Could Mitch possibly scramble away on some of these plays? Absolutely. But what if he came in and absolutely sucked? Do you say, okay, we tried, put Foles back in again? This team is primed for a playoff run, whether they look like it or not. I could be wrong on this, and I'm not defending Foles, but I just can't imagine the coaches putting Mitch back in, because that's a big admission of failure.
Yeah, like we talked about, Matt Nagy's way too stubborn to, you know, admit that he's wrong. He got his guy. He wants to make it work with Foles. But I mean, I'm not against putting Trubisky back in there. Do something to get this offense going, because Foles is a sitting duck back there, and he's going to get blasted repeatedly until he is injured, and then Trubisky has to come in anyways with the way the season's going. I mean, I don't know, John. Something needs to give here.
and the sad part about it is we can't really get a good read on either one of these guys because the offensive line can't block anybody. So it's unfair, but that's what they're dealing with. A bad offensive line that's not going to give them much time for anything to happen.
And, you know, it's obviously showing that, hey, it's not just the quarterback. And a lot of that blame is falling on Matt Nagy, obviously listening to, you know, Foles is even feeling it. I mean, I don't care, you know, what, you know, Nick Foles says about, oh, you know, there's some miscommunication with Brian Griese. I mean, there's still truth to it. Like, there is still truth to that. And Matt Nagy cannot, you know, hide from that anymore. It's not, he can't hide behind Mitchell Trubisky's failures. Foles is there. He's got his guy. And the offense is still doing nothing.
Miscommunication. I'm using finger quotes when I say that.
So the running game has been pretty awful, you know, to say the least, for the last month. Obviously, the offensive line has something to do with that. But Cordarrelle Patterson is allegedly the Bears' number two running back. But in the last three games, he's totaled just 7 carries for 9 yards. I kid you not. Is it time for another running back to get a shot at the number two role? The clock starts when you do.
Short answer, yeah. Look, I think Cordarrelle Patterson is a freak athlete that can break a play or two every game to help your team. He's an incredible kick returner, an exceptional gunner, and just an all-around good football player. And I don't put all of the blame on him for his rushing stats because no one's rushing stats on this team are any good. But if you're going to play behind this inept, ham-fisted, clumsy offensive line, I think you need a more polished skill set at the running back position. Look, they have Lamar Miller on the practice squad, and he's apparently fully healthy or about fully healthy. So bring that dude up. It's not like you're going to throw off any rhythm or chemistry on the offense. You're looking for answers right now. Lamar Miller has been around the league and has found success on several occasions. So, like I said before, Patterson is a good runner, receiver, everything else, but he is still a stretch. It's still a stretch to say that he's an every play running back. So they got to try something new in the backfield.
I mean, the fact that, you know, Patterson is the number two guy says a lot about this Bears running back group right here. So obviously the loss of Tariq Cohen has been huge. And I think, you know, like you said, Lamar Miller, when he's ready, they're going to bring him up and he's going to help in the passing game and in the run game. We'll see how much he can do with that offensive line. But, you know, the Bears, I mean, this has been one of the biggest concerns heading into the season was that running back group. And we were talking about bringing in an established veteran because behind David Montgomery, in case he went down and then, you know, he almost did and then Tariq Cohen did. And, you know, it's the same issues. And obviously the offensive line is a big part of that. But, you know, it's time to, you know, leave Patterson back there returning, you know, kick returns and, you know, put him back at the receiver spot, especially if they're going to be without Robinson here on Sunday.
Yeah, if I'm Lamar Miller, maybe I'm watching that game, be like, nah, you don't have to bring me up yet. Nah, I'm good. Nah, you don't got to put me on that active roster just yet. Oh, give me a couple weeks.
Just going to collect my practice squad salary.
Yeah, I'm good. I don't need that in my life.
Okay, John, so at the end of last week's show, you were pretty positive, which is still very weird to me. You liked the Bears' playoff chances, even if they lost against the Rams. So did Monday's game change your mood, or are you hanging on to a shred of positivity? No clock on this one. Have at it.
Well, I don't know if it's positivity or levity or simply just being callous to the situation now. Look, I knew there was a real possibility that the Bears would lose to the Rams. I didn't think they'd get embarrassed and look like a bunch of punching bags out there, but I knew it could happen. And I even said last week, the Bears could lose to the Rams, Saints, and Titans and still have a real shot at the playoffs because of how their schedule shakes out. They have 2 games against Minnesota, another game against Detroit, a game against Houston and Jacksonville. Those are 5 games they'll probably be favored in, and 9 or 10 wins will probably get you in with this expanded playoff system. I think maybe I left this game just taking the Bears for what they are and what they seem like they're going to be for the next 1-2 years before an inevitable rebuild occurs. They're a borderline playoff team with a bad offense, average to below average coaching, and a reliable defense. If they get to wild card weekend, look, it's going to be really fun and I'm going to be pumped up. And once you get into the dance, anything can happen. But I guess I'm just done expecting or even hoping that this team, as it stands now, will ever take the next step and become the dominant force in the division, much less the conference. It'll be easier on my mind to just look at this team and say, they are what they are. I don't know if what I'm saying is considered positive or negative. I don't know if this should make fans feel better or worse. And probably what I'm saying could be taken as confusing or uninspired. But perhaps that's the perfect reflection of the Chicago Bears football team. Confusing and uninspired. That'll wrap up our 555 segment. It's time to kick the wheels on that old automobile, Aldo Gandia. Aldo, are you awake? You ready to go into Buffon's basement?
I am always awake when I listen to Buffon 55 with John Buffon and Alyssa Barbieri because it is an outstanding show. And John Sigler was great, and what a brave soul. Yeah. I mean, if there's a hurricane outside, I wouldn't be on the phone. I'd be underneath the covers.
What's he doing?
That's some dedication.
I almost felt bad, but he insisted.
Yeah, and he sounded so, you know, articulate and smart and calm, you know, and meanwhile, there's 80-mile-an-hour winds outside.
Yeah, calm. We called him. He's like, I hope you can't hear the rain smacking against my window right now. I'm like, why are you on the phone?
Yeah.
But he was all, and just another day in Louisiana, I guess.
Yeah, I think most Saints.
A lot calmer than Nick Foles back in the pocket for the Bears.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I think most Saints fans are calm right now, anticipating a Bears win against the Bears.
yeah, and guys, I want to start off this segment talking about just the most obvious subject, and that's the head coach and Matt Nagy, and talking about his play calling and his impact on this team, positive and negative. And before I even send it around, I need to get this off my chest because I have a lot of feelings about this. And what I'm seeing is a head coach that is just who can't balance head coaching duties and offensive coordinator duties. He can't be the play caller and the head coach at the same time. Some may be able to do that. He can't, because what we're seeing with this team is absolutely no adjusting in game or pregame. Sean McVay had this team pegged. He had his team ready to go. He knew just what the Chicago Bears were going to do, and he formatted the game plan to defeat the Chicago Bears. And what do we see with the Chicago Bears? The same thing, no matter who the opponent is, we see the same game plan. And it's the fact that they just do not make changes when it's obvious you have to make a change. Why is Ted Ginn even back there? After 2 weeks of seeing him just maybe catch the ball, or against the Rams, literally just stand back there and watch the ball bounce around. But you know what? Throw him back out there because I don't know what else we're supposed to do. And the fact that Nagy is so involved in being the play caller, I think that is taking up so much of his time and so much of his effort and so much of his attention that he can't put any attention into things that a head coach do, like game situations. Whenever Nick Foles wants to up tempo, Matt Nagy says, whoa, slow it down. Slow it down. We're going to look at this play call. I'm going to find the right thing. When they need to hurry up to avoid a challenge call, slow it down. Let's be methodical. When Nick Foles is starting, moving his hands around saying, let's get some rhythm, no, slow it down. I think Matt Nagy thinks that he's the quarterback of this team because he wants to be methodical. He wants to run the offense the way he wants to. Meanwhile, his quarterback, who I don't care if you want to call it a miscommunication or you want to call it things were taken out of context or not, something came out that whenever Matt Nagy has a play call, that Nick Foles knows that he's not going to have enough time. And whether he said that directly to Brian Griese, or you can just kind of build around it and figure it out, the fact of the matter is, it's true. Matt Nagy is throwing in play calls that Nick Foles can't handle. And so he obviously knows that. And once again, differentiating the offensive coordinator and the head coach, head coach Matt Nagy says, I know we need to get Cole Kmet more involved. We said that 3 weeks ago. I know we got to get Cole Kmet on the field still. You're the head coach. You're not just a play caller or offensive coordinator. You can make that happen. And we saw Cole Kmet come in, make a great grab, and then catch another ball right after that. And then he went to the bench. So why is Demetrius Harris still in the game? So Matt Nagy, to me, whenever he is taking on this head coach and offensive coordinator play caller role, it's like someone walking on stilts. If everything is perfect, the ground is level, the sun is shining, everything is going your way, you can move forward. It's going to be slow, methodical, you'll get to where you need to go, but you can do it. The second there's a gust of wind or a pothole or a speed bump, you fall down and it's just everything goes off track and it looks like a disaster. So that is my take on this. He can be a really good head coach because I said on several occasions, he gets his guys to buy in. I think he gets the most out of his players. I think they like him. They have a never say die attitude with this guy. But I just think he's overwhelmed right now, and it's an ego thing because it would be an admission of failure if he handed over those play calling duties and just said, "I'm gonna be the head coach of this team. I'm just gonna do big picture stuff." That would be a blow to him because he's worked so hard to get to this position, and I understand this is an ego driven position. He worked really hard and from nothing to get to where he is, and it would almost be a demotion to hand over play calling abilities. But if you're interested in winning football games, that might be what has to happen. I'll shut up and I'll go to Aldo. What do you think?
Woo-hoo, man.
Woo-hoo.
How do you follow that, Alyssa?
I'm going to say, can we put Matt Nagy back in the pocket behind that offensive line and let him see what it's like back there and then try to call plays?
Thank you. Yeah, I think a big part of the problem here is that Nagy is thinking, you know, this isn't my fault because, as he said in his press conference, I look at that whole play calling situation every week. I ask myself that question. I don't think it's necessary to make a change. And I think the reason is because he feels the players aren't doing as they're told to do. There's some legitimacy to that, given the amount of mistakes the human eye can see. I mean, you know, you don't have to go look at the all 22 to see all the mistakes regarding execution, player execution that are going on, particularly at the line of scrimmage. And even the defensive line has to have some responsibility here because, you know, you got Akeem Hicks, a Pro Bowl, all-pro quality player who leads the league in penalties. That doesn't help. But you've more concerning is an offensive line that every week seems to be getting worse and worse and worse, especially after what I thought was a good start to the season, particularly those first 2-3 games. So is Matt Nagy saying, I'm going to continue to call the plays because I think, you know, if we get better offensive line play, we will have better success. Now, part of the problem, too, is I hear all his press conferences, and so when he's asked, you know, does your quarterback have enough time to throw, he goes, well, I got to go look at the film. Well, the reason why you don't know the answer to that question could be because you're looking at that Denny's menu of a play call sheet, you know, a second before the ball is snapped and a second after the whistle blows, and so you're not having time to kind of absorb what is actually happening on the football field. And as I've said before many times, yeah, there are a lot of successful play callers in the NFL who are head coaches. But that doesn't necessarily mean Ryan Pace is one of those guys. You know, Matt Nagy is one of those guys. The reason I brought up Ryan Pace's name is because Ryan Pace's biggest mistake arguably was drafting Mitch Trubisky, a quarterback who had only 13 starts in college. Perhaps, arguably, his second biggest mistake is to bring in a head coach who had only called offensive plays for, what, 6, 7, 8 games and had a terrible game in the playoffs where he totally forgot about one of the biggest weapons that team had, the Kansas City Chiefs had, which was Kareem Hunt. He didn't call any running play. Sound familiar? Yeah, it does sound familiar because he seems to do that here in Chicago. So, you know, it's a complicated thing because there's so many areas right now that are defective. But clearly, I agree with you, John, without a doubt that this guy, you know, needs to take more responsibility, needs to make some changes, needs to, you know, the whole punt returner thing, it was pretty obvious after the first game that Ted Ginn was back there that maybe this isn't a good thing, and maybe they should have been looking for a replacement. On and on and on it goes. Lots of stuff going on that is concerning.
Yeah, I have no problem with Matt Nagy, the coach, aside from, you know, the lack of situational awareness at times. But like John was mentioning, he's overwhelmed trying to do two jobs. He wants to be someone that can do it all, and that's clearly not the case. We've seen this for the last couple of years. And something that he said in one of his press conferences on Tuesday was he said that the offense was in a rut. And, you know, to be in a rut, you have to have started somewhere positive to begin with.
A rut insinuates there was clearly not the case. A positive spot.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, you're not in a rut. Your offense has been there. Like, they've been dead for like the last 2 years. So not a rut.
You're in a canyon.
A canyon. The Grand Canyon.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. And he listen, Matt Nagy came from the Andy Reid tree, and didn't Andy Reid understand what was going on enough that he handed over play calling duties at one point? Like, yeah. There's nothing wrong with being a really good head coach and just being like that overseer of things. And that's a vital part, if not the most important part, on the sidelines. And if you can do that and give play calling abilities to somebody else, why not do it? I mean, I know DeFilippo has called plays. I think he called him in Jacksonville last year, and I'm pretty sure Lazor's called plays. So why not have that discussion? And that gives you more situational awareness where maybe you don't have to call two timeouts on the same drive, or maybe you start thinking about using a timeout at the end of the half when you know you have to kick it away in the third quarter. Or maybe it just gives you a better sense of what to do within the game. You get to focus on the game more instead of thinking what play to call, what do I do here, what are we going to do here, what's the right play here. If you're just the overseer of things and you get to make those big game time decisions and you actually can be focused on that outside of play calling, then why not do it? Because I think Matt Nagy can be a good head coach. I'm just not sold that he can be a good head coach and a great play caller, because there's no reason for anyone to believe that right now.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like he doesn't want to admit that he's in the wrong, that he's messed up, because he's like, oh, you know, everyone, you know, look, I'm going to be, you know, admitting to everyone that, you know, they're right. I can't do this. I can't do both things. But at this point, he is the head coach. He needs to coach the team. It feels like he's just way too wrapped up in the offense. But then at the same time, he's not doing anything to help the offense. So it's like he needs to be the head coach, hand the play calling duties off. Not that it's going to happen. He's way too damn stubborn to ever give up play calling duties. I don't care what he says. I'll believe it when I see it. But it's time for a change. It's the same thing over and over again. And, you know, it wouldn't be a bad idea. Remember the offense the Bears were running when Trubisky was in there earlier in the season? With the play action, that kind of stuff. I mean, it helped the offensive line too. Like, maybe go back to that. Cause it's like when Foles got in there, they went right back to the offense that didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because Nagy got to go back to his old thing he was doing last year, where he got to run his system, because Nick Foles knows how to run this system. So let's ditch what was working for Mitch and let's start running. Let's unleash this offense. Let's stretch the legs on this thing. And so far, last week, the defense scored more points than the offense, which is something you always want to see out of a offensive mastermind, offensive minded coach who's supposed to fix the offense. So now I don't want to say I don't want this to come off like this is 100% Matt Nagy's fault. And because let's just call it for what it is. This offensive line is terrible. And losing James Daniels, that was watching the levee break, because they were operating on such a small margin of success as they were as a starting unit. Take one of those guys out, and now Rashard Coward. Did you see some of those blocks that he, or I don't want to call them blocks because that would be an insult to what blocks are. But did you see whatever it was that he was doing against the Rams a few times? Like, this is bad. And so maybe this is going to be another referendum on pace to say, hey, if you're in win now mode, go fix this now. There are guys you can sign right now that would probably be an upgrade over this situation. Why is Quentin Spain not at Hallis Hall right now? I don't get it. Aldo, you're the one that was saying that they need to go out, maybe even as so far as to make a trade. But there's even guys that they can sign without giving anything up. Why hasn't it happened yet?
Well, I think it hasn't happened because they're being stubborn. Ryan Pace says, you know, I've invested the fifth most in salary to our offensive tackles. There's only four other teams in the NFL that have invested more money into their offensive tackles. These guys got to get the job done. They've invested heavily in the middle of the line. 2 second-round draft picks in Cody Whitehair and James Daniels. And then they acquire via free agency a former first-round draft pick. So I think they are feeling, well, we've invested so much in this offensive line. And then we brought in an offensive line coordinator, coach, who is going to get the absolute best out of them. We're going to make this work. And so that is, I think, part of the problem is they're all their chips are in on the guys that they have now, and they feel so strongly about some of the backups that they are just hoping that they turn that around. But I think that Matt Nagy, and what was it, today's press conference, he started throwing a little bit of the blame around. He pointed out the offensive tackle play and that it wasn't getting it done. When he started to talk about the offensive tackles, I started to say to myself, "Uh-oh, I remember when John Fox in his last year started to say things about Ryan Pace and the players and so forth. Is this the beginning of the end between that beautiful friendship that these two guys had?" So there could be, you know, if they don't get a win against the Saints, I'm going to be reading the everything they say in between the lines just to see if there's going to be a fracture in this relationship. Because, again, everybody's to blame. Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy, the players. Heck, I would even blame the beer salesman if there was a beer salesman at Soldier Field, but there isn't. So it's a mess right now. Hopefully it'll get better.
Yeah, that friendship between Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, I mean, that was, you know, looking good in 2018 when they were winning. I mean, they are winning still, but it feels like everything is collapsing right now. But they're still 5-2.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, they're in a good position still right now to, if they can go in and beat the Saints, which, I mean, I don't expect them to, because the offense is giving me no reason to believe it's going to change. There is no reason Matt Nagy has given me for what we're seeing on the field that I think that is going to change. I think it's going to be more of the same. The Saints have a great run defense. We're going to watch the Bears watch this. Wasn't this the game last year where they ran the ball 7 times against the Saints on Walter Payton bobblehead day?
Oh, that's for the love right. of God. Oh my gosh, you're right.
So, like, I expect to see hopefully not more than 7 runs, but I don't expect the run game to get going. Nick Foles is screwed standing back there. I mean, this is the whole thing is a mess, but we'll see how this goes. They're still 5-2, though. That's the thing I'm hanging on. They're still 5-2.
Yeah, and that's great. And like I said before, take it for what it is, and they won some close games, and you can say they got lucky if you want to say that, and they're still in a position where they can make the playoffs, which is fun, and it's good to watch this team knowing that they actually have potential to make the playoffs. If they were, you know, 2-5 right now, what the hell are we talking about? They're going nowhere. So at least there's something to shoot for still with this season. But can't you just adjust to something? Like we were talking to John about the Saints, and he said their secondary is rough, and he said they can pick apart and they can have some success throwing the ball. Well, maybe because they can't block anybody, wouldn't it be okay to go into max protect every once in a while
and
give Nick Foles as much time as possible to take advantage of that weak secondary and then maybe run it out of that package? Aldo, I know you love this talk. You're talking about I'm talking about power football and, you know, getting as much beef up there as possible. But I know Matt Nagy didn't come here to run the I formation, but I think he also came here to score more than 3 points. So if you can get some time with max protect and take advantage of a weak secondary, isn't that something they should at least think about doing?
I think so. I would love to have, you know, the greatest aerial attack in the NFL and throw the ball 40 times and get 450 yards passing and 5 touchdowns. I would love that. But that's not the team that you have. You don't have the quarterback. You don't have the offensive line. And frankly, right now, I'm not sure outside of Allen Robinson and a very young Darnell Mooney that the wide receiver corps is capable of playing that kind of game. What you do have are some big offensive linemen with big butts who can get up off the line of scrimmage. You've got J.P. Holtz, who last year played the fullback position and had success at it. Out of the I formation for a period of time, I remember Adam Hoge asking Matt Nagy, you're averaging 6, 7, 8 yards a game, a rush out of the I formation. Why not do it more often? They ain't bring me here to run the I formation. Well, come on, dude. You know, you've got to adjust to what you have. And in fact, that is what I got a soundbite here. It's a little bit long, but let me play it. Dan Wiederer is asking Nick Foles about the offense. I'll let Dan set up the question and listen to what Foles says. It'll come up in a second here. It's been sleeping so long.
When you talk about the ongoing quest to establish an offensive identity, what are the specifics of the questions that you guys need to be answering to finally find that?
That's a good question. I mean, just keeping it generic is who do we want to be with the personnel and the coaches that we have? That's really the question. And that's what we're working towards. And that's where, you know, we started the work day to day. It's great to be back at work. You know, it's great to be back at the building. It's never easy after a tough.
All right, I'm not going to play it. The rest of it is like a minute long, but they're still asking this question, who do we want to be? But the way that Foles phrased it is that I think what he is saying is that he is basically saying what he kind of told Greasy is that we don't have the personnel to be the Matt Nagy offense, you know? The quarterback, Matt Nagy, we have a personnel to run a different type of offense, and we're still trying to figure out what that is and what it, I think that they're debating, you know, should we be a run first offense because these are the players that we've got and, you know, to be a more as opposed to being a offense like Matt Nagy wants, which is can do any and everything. So this identity thing with the offense is still going on in Matt Nagy's third year with the team and into week 7 of the NFL. This is ridiculous. It really is.
Yeah, and what this whole thing has done, especially with the quarterback change, is it has put Matt Nagy and his offense in the crosshairs, because it used to be really easy just to say, well, if they had a quarterback, this offense would be humming. If they had somebody that could run, and I'm as guilty as anybody buying into that, thinking, you know, if they have a quarterback who could really run this offense, or they can run it the way that Nagy wants them to run this offense, oh man, we could really see what they could do. Well, he made that quick decision early in the year to put in his guy. And his guy behind this offensive line is not doing anything. I mean, they can't do anything in this system. So I don't know if he realized. I'm sure he did. He's a smart guy. But by bringing Foles in, you are now putting the pressure on yourself because you don't have an excuse anymore. And now you can start criticizing the system, and you can start criticizing the coach. And the national narrative can't be, well, he needs a quarterback to run. He needs his guy in there to run it. This isn't Matt Nagy's fault. Well, now you can start making that. You can make that argument now. And this is why things are the heat's going to get turned up a little bit if they lose 2 more in a row, or if they end up missing the playoffs, or God forbid, coming out of this season with a losing record somehow. I hope that's not the case, and I don't think it will be. But if something like that would happen, then the pressure gets turned up. Say, hey, coach, you got your guy. Your offense still can't do anything. You're a professional football team, and your defense is outscoring your offense. Right. And we brought you in here to fix the offense. So what are you doing? So I think that every week that you have another performance like this, and God willing, there won't be that many more, but every time you get something like this, Matt Nagy is the one that's going to take the heat now. People are, you know, saying how bad Nick Foles is playing, or they're criticizing Nick Foles, but the majority of the heat and just vitriol is going to Matt Nagy now. And that's something that's going to continue if they only score 3 points as an offense.
Yeah, like you said, you know, he was hiding behind Mitchell Trubisky. He was, you know, if only they had a quarterback, if only it wasn't Trubisky in there, and he finally did put his guy in. And it's been the same thing. Foles has been in there for 4 games, and it's just remained the same. Do you know they haven't eclipsed 70 rushing yards in the four games that Foles has started this year? It's just abysmal, yeah. The entire thing. But, yeah, Matt Nagy is now taking the blame. Something needs to give here because, you know, at this point it's really just getting ridiculous.
Well, Aldo, I'll ask you this. Is it just more likely, and because they're coming off a short week and, you know, they haven't really made any significant change as far as personnel that maybe they as of this recording, is it safe to say you're probably just going to see more of what you saw against LA against the Saints? Is that the more likely scenario? I want you to imagine where it's on Sunday, and if you had to place a bet that you're going to see more of the same or something drastically different, what are you betting on?
Those are my only two choices.
Yeah.
Because I think it's going to be somewhere in between. I do think that the LA thing was partly, you know, traveling cross country, playing in a new stadium, playing against a fired up Rams team that wanted redemption for the humiliation the Bears imparted on them on a Sunday night football game. So I think there was a lot of that going on, and I don't think that the Bears are going to look nearly as bad as the Saints. I actually think that the Bears have a chance to beat up on the Saints team because they're the ones that are going to be traveling. They're the ones that are having a tough week because of the weather issues down in Louisiana. They're the ones that don't have their star wide receiver. We may not have ours either, but I think, you know, Michael Thomas is a very unique football player. Now, they still have Alvin Kamara, but nonetheless, I think this defense can have some success against Drew Brees and the offense. And I do think that if they make changes, some schematic changes, that they can be somewhat effective against the Saints. I think they can put up just enough points to squeak out a small victory. So I'm hopeful. You know, as a Bears fan, I'm always going to be hopeful first and then, you know, bitching and moaning afterwards. I just think that there's still room for some hope here that better minds are going to go over to Matt Nagy and say, listen, buddy, this is what we need to do. Just like John Buffon said on Buffon 55, let's max protect on every throw past the 10-yard marker, and let's play more I formation. Let's play ball control. Let's go back a little bit into the era of the George Halas Bears, and let's go out there and win a football game.
But do you honestly think that's going to happen this week, or is it, or do they really need to, or do they have to take another ass whooping for that to actually kick over? Do you really think in 6 days they're going to do that?
I think, gosh, you really are pinning me up against the wall and asking me for my loose change in my pocket, right?
Yeah. Give me your lunch money and give me and whatever else you got in your pocket. But
no, I don't.
Because if I had to pick one or the other, and say, hey, do you think they're going to change this offense for the Saints, or do you think that it's going to be more of the same? And if those are my only two options, and I have to pick one, I'm going to say you're probably going to see more of the same. Now, hopefully there's wrinkles in there. Hopefully there's something different in there. But if I had to choose, I mean, history shows us that they think they got the system down. They think they got a recipe for success. They just need to execute it better.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big problem where you think what the game plan is what you need to win. You think it's the right game plan, and it seems to be the same game plan every week. It's just we're not executing the game plan. The game plan's good. We just can't execute it. Well, you need a game plan you can execute. And I hope. I'm not rooting for the Bears to screw up. I'm not rooting for the Bears to play poorly. I want to see changes. That's why I'm getting so riled up about this. But I just think that if they could maybe cater things more to what they can do, and especially go away from things they can't do, then maybe they'll have a chance. And I hope they do that against the Saints. But I have no reason to believe that right now. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they change things. But I'm going off of prior evidence, and there's no evidence of anything that they're going to change things right now.
I can't blame you.
Yeah, no, I would lean more towards what you were saying, John. Like, I would expect more of the same rather than making changes, because that's what we've seen every week from Matt Nagy and from this offense. You know, I think going back to the Colts game, we saw something similar. They had scored 3 points up until like the final minute, and then they had a garbage time touchdown. But it was a very similar performance. And then look at what they did the following week against the Buccaneers. They came out. I know the offense didn't exactly light it up, but Nick Foles did enough. They scored 20 points, which is very good for this offense. So, I mean, we'll see. I think if they do change some things up here against the Saints, they can score on this secondary. It's just a matter of, is Matt Nagy going to make the necessary changes? Which I, to this point, has been no.
I'll ask you, before we wrap things up, I'll ask you guys this. And basically what I'm asking you is what my final B55 question was about. How do you feel about this team? I know that's, wow, what a broad question. But because they do have a real shot at the playoffs. Either one of you, and I'll start with Aldo, do you hold out hope that they can take the step and be that dominant force in the division, much less the conference? Do you have hope that can happen in 2020, or are you taking them for what they are, which is they'll probably sneak into the playoffs and then we're just hoping against hope?
I still hold out a little hope that they can turn this offense around. Now, the injury issue is really, hurting my hopes. But I still believe that Nick Foles is capable of coming in and doing some really good things for this offense. You know, Nick today at the press conference reiterated something he's talked about the last several weeks. He says, you know, got to keep in mind that, you know, I'm new here. The offensive coaching staff is new here. There are some other new offensive players that are new here, and it takes a little while to get the offense gelling, and sometimes it doesn't happen. So he was being honest, but sometimes it does. And so I'm holding out hope that they will. The key thing, of course, is we need to see improvement in the offensive line, and we need to see an offensive scheme that helps the offensive line. Let's not put Nick Foles back there on 5-7 step drops where he's got to hold the ball for 3 seconds. It's not going to happen, especially when you're playing against teams with dominant pass rushes. Let's get the ball out quickly. Let's run the ball more effectively. Let's see some max protect. And I think that is eventually going to happen. I think Matt Nagy is going to smell the coffee and say, hey, this is what has to happen, because my job is on the line. My boss's job is on the line. So, it really has come to that. And I would not at all be surprised if it starts this week against the Saints at home at Soldier Field.
So it's pretty early on in the season, and they are 5-2. So I'm going to try to, you know, be a little bit optimistic here. So I do have hope that things are going to get better, but do they get to the point where, you know, this team can, you know, earn a playoff spot, or where they can make a run in the postseason? And obviously that all comes back to the offense, and the offense has been about as bad, you know, as we've seen over these last couple of years. And so at this point, like Aldo was saying, Nick Foles and this coaching staff, they're new to this. And I remember back during the summer where Matt Nagy said, when he brought in the new coaching staff, how they kind of had a little bit of a powwow where they were in a room together. They're breaking everything down, what was working, what wasn't. And it was very like honest, and they were open, and they were, you know, willing to make changes here. That's something I think that we need to see here. They need to have a come to Jesus moment with Matt Nagy and just really discuss, you know, what needs to change here on offense. What can we do to get something going? And I do think it's going to get better. I mean, because it's so bad. And looking, obviously, with this defense, this is a championship caliber defense. And when you look at the remainder of their schedule, I mean, I think they could win 10 games, which should, you know, possibly be enough to earn a wild card spot. So if this offense can just be even close to average, because I don't even know if they could be average at this point, then I think that they can make the playoffs.
Well, that's a good mixture of positivity and negativity. We are the yin and yang. This entire show is the yin and yang because we try to bring positive in. I will always give it a healthy dose of negativity. I am a curmudgeon in my somewhat younger age, but that's okay. But before we close things out, Alyssa and I have a new show here on the Barroom Network that we debuted a few weeks ago, one that I'm super excited about. We are calling it Pass the Mic. It's a show all about empowering and spotlighting female voices in sports media. We have had three episodes, three great guests, and I really ask that everyone go and listen to those episodes. They are evergreen. They're not timely. So if you want to go back and listen to half, or you missed the first one or the second one, you don't have to be within that week to listen to them. You can listen to them anytime. And it's just incredible to hear the different journeys that these women have taken to get on top of their profession. And we recently had an independent NFL blogger named Lindsay O.K. on, and she has a huge social media presence. She has a successful independent NFL blog, and it was just really interesting hearing about her journey from interning with Ed Reed and then deciding that she was not going to do the company thing. She wanted to do her own thing, and she wanted to make it her own, and the courage it took to do that, and the harassment she gets online from readers whenever she puts out her opinion, because she is analyzing things, so clearly she has an opinion on something, and as you can imagine, she gets some pretty unwarranted feedback. Now, every analyst, you know, gets kickback on some things, but a lot of the time, she gets it just for being a woman, and that's where we draw the line, where that's completely unacceptable. So it's just been a thrill to be a part of this show so far, and we're only three episodes in, but we're having a lot of fun. We're spotlighting a lot of issues and having conversations that not a lot of people are having, but we're also having a lot of fun because it is celebrating these women as well. So Alyssa, I think you'd agree that it's been a pretty fun project so far.
It really has, and it's been eye-opening, I think, you know, not only for our listeners, but for us as well, to get, you know, kind of see everything that they've gone through and all of the success that they've had. And we've had, quite a variety of guests here that are, you know, they have their own stories, and it's really fun to dig into their past and how they got to be where they are and the different routes, like you were mentioning with Lindsay O.K. and getting that internship with Ed Reed and where it led to her being an independent NFL blogger. So this entire process has been amazing. It feels like we've been doing this forever, and I can't wait to keep doing it over and over again, to keep meeting some of these incredible female sports reporters and journalists out there, and to shine a light on their stories and to shine a light on their success, because they deserve it. They've been working their butts off, and they deserve all of the accolades that they're going to get from us and from everyone.
100%. And that show is every other Thursday here on the Barroom Network. I hope you all give it a listen and share it with your friends. And don't forget, after every Bears game, if you like the passion you hear now, Aldo, Tyler Ellis, and I will give you our immediate reactions about the Bears' performance on the new postgame show called Bear Football right here on the Barroom Network. You're getting raw reaction right after the game, when we end mid-game, because we go on at halftime as well. So right after the Bears game, check it out, because you're going to get the unfiltered reaction, good or bad, ugly, angry, you name it. You're going to get every emotion that you could possibly imagine. So that's Bear Football right after every Bears game right here on the Barroom Network.
And John, may I say that your rants were epic following this loss. And while I enjoy that, because there's nothing more that I love more than a John Buffone rant, but I'm hoping that you guys are more positive after this week, which would, you know, obviously tell us that the Bears offense is better.
I'd love that.
So make sure that you do tune into Bear Football after the Bears game against the Saints. And let me add that the best way to stay informed with all of the great things happening here at the Barroom is to visit the newly opened website, barroomnetwork.com. Make sure you bookmark that so it's easy to find. And go ahead and bookmark bearswire.com. I am the managing editor over there, and I'm getting you ready for the Saints game, for the trade deadline, and for everything in between. So go ahead and check that out.
Awesome, awesome. But that will do it for us. For Aldo Gandia and Alyssa Barbieri, I'm John Buffone. We'll see you next week, everybody.